The next case of the day is number 07-1989, Jeanette Peps against Rockledge Furniture. I believe we have a presentation by telephone for the plaintiff. Mr. Kine, can you hear me?
Yes, I can, Your Honor. Thank you.
And you may proceed.
Thank you. This is a case about Brett Johnson facing a choice in March 2005. He had to reduce the number of assistant managers at his three Ashley Furniture stores from two at each store to one at each. At the Madison store, there was a male and female pair of assistant managers, and at the Pewaukee store, there was also a male and female pair. In each case, Johnson chose to keep the male and dismiss the female. The record supports the conclusion that he made this decision because of sex. Jeanette Peps was hired in 2003 as a salesperson. Johnson promoted Peps to assistant manager in the latter part of 2004 at the Madison store. When Johnson promoted Peps, she joined a male, Scott Rorick, as assistant manager. In other words, when Johnson promoted Peps, there was both a male assistant manager, Rorick, and a female assistant manager, Peps. In March 2005, Johnson and upper management decided to reduce the number of assistant managers at the stores for which Johnson was responsible, from two assistants to one. Mary Tortorici, a female, was an assistant manager at the Pewaukee store. Johnson chose to terminate her, keeping the male assistant manager at the Pewaukee store. Johnson also chose to terminate Jeanette Peps from the Madison store, keeping Rorick, a male, at that store. The district court held that there was insufficient evidence to prove gender discrimination under a direct method. Plaintiffs can use both circumstantial and direct evidence in combination to prove a case under the direct method under a Title VII case. Relevant evidence proving intentional discrimination can include behavior or comments directed at other employees in the protected group. The record contains just such evidence. For example, Johnson told a female employee, Jennifer Kane, that she would go places if she acted like a man. Johnson would engage in dismissive and eye-rolling type behavior at meetings when women spoke, and Jeanette Peps was there to personally observe that. When Scott Rorick would make a sexist remark or joke at a meeting, there was at least one instance where Johnson just laughed along. Johnson also made reference to Mary Tortorici as the mother of the store where she worked. Johnson directed other behavior at Tortorici when he fired her. Johnson lied to her about the reason for her termination. He told her that she was being fired because of a downsizing, but later he claimed it was really for poor performance. Then, in spite of the fact that he claimed she was fired for poor performance, he offered to write her a positive letter of reference. Johnson also told Tortorici that Human Resources put him up to her termination, but the human resources official denied that Johnson had ever talked with him about terminating Tortorici before it happened. But there's more. Other evidence that can be offered to prove a direct discrimination case is evidence, even if it is not statistically rigorous, that similarly situated employees outside the group were treated more favorably. There were a total of six assistant managers under Johnson's ultimate supervision in March of 2005. Four of them were men, two were women. Every one of the male assistant managers were unaffected by the supposed downsize. Only the women were let go. Finally, a plaintiff can rely on evidence that the reasons given for the decision were not truthful. Johnson lied to Peps when he terminated her, telling her that he would keep her in mind for management positions that opened up soon thereafter. Instead, he never informed her of any openings and hired men for those positions that opened up. Furthermore, he told her that the downsizing was a supposed cost-saving measure. But Scott Rorick, the male assistant manager retained in Madison, earned more than Peps earned. So a jury could conclude that that reason did not make sense. Now, the district court refused to consider the comment that Johnson made to Kane because he ruled it was a stray comment, the court dealt with stray comments in the Elmo versus Coca-Cola bottling company case. In that case, the employee was passed over for a promotion in 1992. The manager explained that the company wanted a man for that position, and other managers made general comments that they didn't like women in upper management. In 93, Emil applied for another position, but she did not get that position. The court held that the remarks that she overheard could be used as part of a case of proving discrimination. The court noted that in that case, the plaintiff did not seek to rely on those statements by themselves. Pets does not seek to rely on statements from Johnson by themselves either. They are only part of the case. Furthermore, the Emil court ruled that comments made about company policy with respect to employment could be used as evidence of discrimination. In this case, Johnson's remark that you had to be a woman to go places in the company is a reflection of the company policy, and he was the decision maker with respect to the supposed downsizing. The district court also ruled that the plaintiff could not make her case under the direct method because of the same actor inference. In Johnson v. Zima, the court noted that the psychological assumption underlying the same actor inference may not hold true on the facts of a particular case. That's true in this case. When Pets was promoted to assistant manager, there were two assistant managers, including her, one male, one female. In April, when Johnson no longer had the option of having both a male and female assistant manager in each store, he chose to keep the males because they were male. Thus, the psychological assumption does not hold true in this case. Johnson only promoted Pets to assistant manager, and Tortorici for that matter, to those positions because he knew he had a male assistant manager to count on working with them. District court also apparently applied the mini-riff version of the prima facie case. The court should not have used that version of the test in this case. It runs against the oft-stated policy that proving a prima facie case should not be an onerous burden. In some cases, a mini-riff variation of the test would be appropriate, but not in this case. There were six assistant managers to begin with. Regardless of who assumed responsibility for performing the tasks that Pets performed, Scott Orrick assumed the supervisory authority that she had. It was Johnson's view of women as poor leaders that led him to fire Pets, not a belief that women were not cut out to perform the office duties that were Pets' responsibilities, the duties that were absorbed by other employees. A jury would be entitled to believe the following. Johnson was tolerant of female store managers as long as there was also a male store manager, because he favored employees who acted like men. Those were the type of employees that, quote, went places, end quote. When it came time to eliminate store managers so there would be only one assistant per store, Johnson wanted the females out. Even though downsizing was a supposed cost-saving measure, Johnson chose the higher-paid male, Rorick, to remain in the Madison store instead of Pets. And when additional store manager positions quickly opened after Pets and Tortorici were fired, Johnson broke his promise to let Pets know about them so she could be considered. Adding credibility to this theory of sex discrimination is that Johnson felt it necessary to lie to Tortorici about why she was fired, telling her she was being downsized when she was supposedly, actually, being fired for cause, and then stating that he received human resources approval for her termination before the fact, but in reality, he did not. In other words, Johnson was trying to cover up his true motivation. A jury could consider this evidence and come to the reasonable conclusion that sex was a factor in the decision to let Jeanette Pets go in March of 2005. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel, and we'll hear now from Ms. Jones.
To please the court, I'm Amy Schmidt-Jones, and I represent the defendant Rockledge Furniture in this matter. I'd like to start by addressing the plaintiff's arguments with respect to the direct case of discrimination. This court has been clear that when a plaintiff, as here, is relying on circumstantial evidence of discrimination to meet the burden of proof under the direct method, that circumstantial evidence must point directly to a discriminatory motive with respect to the event in question. So in this case, the evidence needs to point directly to the fact that Ms. Petz was terminated because of her sex. I would submit that when the court looks at the record as a whole and context surrounding all of the events, it simply does not support that kind of direct inference. I'd like to start by a part of the totality of the record, which is the presence of a same actor inference in this case. It's not a weak inference in this case. It's quite a strong one. Brett Johnson hired Jeanette Petz. He promoted her. He hired Mary Tortorici. He hired numerous other female managers. When he had to eliminate Jeanette Petz's position, he didn't turn her out. He actually offered her other positions within the organization with the express statement that when positions become available in management, that she would be eligible to take those positions. And in a piece of evidence that opposing counsel didn't mention in his argument and did not mention also in briefs below, after Mayor Tortorici was terminated and after Jeanette Petz was terminated, he hired another woman as an assistant manager. And I don't believe there's any evidence in the record that he did so to keep a male-female structure in a store. And I don't think that's supported at all. One point I'd like to make about what is and is not in the record, opposing counsel has said that Brett Johnson had to eliminate a position in each of the three stores. In fact, that's not what the record supports. The record supports that the Madison store in particular, which is where Ms. Petz worked, was a lower performing store. It was the smallest store. So that was the store at which they were focusing on reducing the management staff. And that is the store where he eliminated her position. In contrast, Ms. Tortorici was not fired because of a downsizing. It is not in the record that he told Ms. Tortorici she was fired because of a downsizing. In fact, she was fired for poor performance. And that is what the record supports. That's what her termination letter supports. Now, going back to this same actor conference concept, there's no evidence in the record that Brett Johnson had certain stereotypical views as to what a person needed to be to succeed in the company, or that only individuals with certain male qualities could succeed in the company. That's simply not in the record, and it's belied by the fact that he, again, hired another woman as an assistant manager after both Ms. Tortorici and Ms. Petz were let go. Now, in looking at some of the other circumstantial evidence proffered by the plaintiff, there are several comments to which he points that he believes show discriminatory intent in this case. This circuit has been quite clear that for remarks to support an inference of discrimination, particularly in the context of a direct case, they need to be made by the decision maker, contemporaneous with the decision, and related to the decision. None of the remarks that are proffered by opposing counsel meet that standard. You have the comment that was made to a different employee well over a year before her termination, and complimenting her on how she handled the given situation, that if she kept acting like a man, she'd go places. It's a stray remark under this court's standards, and it does not raise an inference of discrimination. Again, when after he made that comment, he promoted Jeanette Petz, and he then hired another woman following her termination. There's a comment about him referring to Ms. Tortorici as a mother of the store. Again, that occurred well before the termination of either woman. I would submit that on its face, calling someone a mother doesn't evidence discriminatory intent on the part of the speaker. There's again an overstatement by opposing counsel as to what the record shows about comments made by Brett Johnson in staff meetings. Ms. Petz, in her deposition, initially made a conclusory statement that he said things in multiple meetings. When she was further pressed on that point, she clarified she could remember only one meeting. It occurred in 2003, well over a year before her termination, and she couldn't even remember what he said. That's not even competent proof for purposes of summary judgment. And in addition, there's some statement that Brett Johnson would hear comments in other meetings by other employees, which he tolerated. Again, it's the same kind of scenario. When Ms. Petz was pressed on that point, she could only remember one instance in which a comment that she thought was negative about women was made in front of Mr. Johnson. It was well before her termination. She couldn't remember what it was exactly, who it was said to. That's simply not the type of evidence that suffices to create an issue of fact for summary judgment. Now, with respect to this idea that Brett Johnson is a liar, or that the evidence has shown that he lied about certain things, I would submit initially the record does not show, again, that Brett Johnson told Ms. Tortorici that she was terminated because of a downsizing. He did testify her position was not filled after she left. And he also did not tell Ms. Tortorici, or it's not in the record, that HR put him up to it. There is a dispute of fact between Mr. Johnson and Mr. Cranenbrock, who was the HR person at the time, as to whether they talked about her termination on the day of her termination. There's a dispute on that point. But that's a collateral point. Ms. Tortorici was terminated for performance, poor performance. Ms. Petz was not. Ms. Petz was invited to stay with the company with the opportunity of future management openings. With respect to the question of Mr. Johnson not calling Ms. Petz after she left to tell her about future openings, that's held up as another lie on his part. I don't think the record bears that out. In fact, what it shows is that he had to shuffle management staff very quickly in the wake of her departure. He then again hired a woman to be an assistant manager, and he had given her the invitation to stay with the company, which she declined. There's an attack by opposing counsel on the validity of the cost-cutting justification for eliminating her position. Her position was eliminated to cut costs, cut operational costs at the store. It's undisputed her position was eliminated. A management salary was eliminated. The point that opposing counsel is trying to make is that if they had fired Scott Rorick, they would have saved more money because he made more money at the time. Well, Scott Rorick also had 10-plus years of experience in the big box retail area, which Ms. Petz did not have. Her management experience had been running a single submarine franchise, which they thought was submarine sandwich franchise, which they felt was valuable experience, but it was not an apples-to-apples comparison. It's Brett Johnson's business judgment and business decision to decide when he has to cut costs what he's going to value, and the record shows that he valued the experience that Scott Rourke had over the experience Ms. Petz had. Now, all of that together, looking at the record fairly stated, you have a very strong same-actor scenario, and the evidence that's proffered by the plaintiff, when you actually examine what the evidence is in the record to support the things opposing counsel is saying, is just not there. Under this circuit's authority, the evidence he's proffering simply does not suffice to raise an inference of discrimination under the direct method. Briefly, with respect to the indirect case, there is disagreement between the parties as to the appropriate prima facie case to apply. I think the only element we're talking about is the fourth element of the prima facie case. Opposing counsel and plaintiff would like the court to apply the standard that all they need to show is that similarly situated people outside the protected class receive more favorable treatment, whereas we've offered the mini-RIF prima facie case as the appropriate standard to apply. This circuit has said that in fashioning the prima facie case, you have to look at the realities of the workplace in question. The reality of the Madison home store, the Madison Ashley home store, following this position elimination, was that the position was gone, the person was gone, but the duties remained, and the duties continued to be performed by women. Under the mini-RIF standard, which this court has said several times applies when the duties remain but are reallocated to other employees, under that standard, her prima facie case fails. We would also submit, even if you apply the other similarly situated standard, plaintiff wants to compare herself to Scott Rorick, the other assistant manager. They shared an assistant manager title. His duties were very different. He oversaw the sales function of the store, where she oversaw administrative and operational issues. And in addition, again, he had 10 years of experience in big box retail, which she did not have. And when you're looking at who is similarly situated, you're looking, can you make a meaningful comparison between these two people? And we would submit that you can't, given the differences between those two. On the question of pretext, we'd also submit that Ms. Petz cannot meet her burden of showing pretext, and many of the same arguments she makes on that point are the arguments she makes in support of her direct case. So I won't repeat those there. In closing, I just would say that many of the assertions that have been made in this case, both in the briefing and today, again, are not supported by the evidence that's actually in the record in this case. And for these reasons, we would request that the decision of the district court below be affirmed and that the summary judgment be affirmed.
Thank you, Ms. Jones. How much time does Mr. Kinney have? Mr. Kinney, you have 1 minute left.
Thank you, Your Honor. The opposing counsel has made note of the Benitez replacement. The record should reflect that she did not start working in any management position for, I believe it was months after the decision at issue had been made. But in that period of time, there were assistant manager positions open at Pewaukee and in Madison, none of which were made known to Ms. Petz or offered to her, in spite of Mr. Johnson's promise to her to let her know about those and consider her for those positions. That is yet one more part of the mosaic that Ms. Burkholz can rely, Ms. Petz can rely on in proving her case under a direct method. The positions that were offered to Ms. Petz were non-management positions. And with that, I will close and ask the court to reverse the decision from the district court and to remand it for trial.
Thank you, Mr. Kinney. Indeed, our thanks both to Mr. Kinney and to Ms. Jones for their fine presentations today. This case will now be taken under advisement. The court has finished the call of the day, and therefore we will rise until 9:30 tomorrow.